Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week at this time by Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster. And this episode, on Thursday, March 27th, 2025, will feature articles that appeared in the Arizona Mirror over the past week. Since this program airs only once a week, some of the articles may be a bit dated and breaking stories may be added toward the end. The Arizona Mirror is an independent publication which sources stories from all over the state and the nation. We will focus primarily on stories that impact people in Arizona. In this week's episode, these are some of the stories we'll be reading. Daniel Hernandez launches bid for Southern Arizona congressional seat after Grijalva's death. Arizona GOP wages legislative war on transgender existence. Tribal flags removed from Phoenix VA hospital under new federal policy. And Hobbs displays tribal flags in executive tower after removal from VA hospital. Stanton and Ansari demand return of Arizona Native heroes to Pentagon website. And let's get started. We start out this week's episode with this story. Daniel Hernandez launches bid for Southern Arizona congressional seat after Grijalva's death. Former Giffords intern touts experience working across aisle in Republican-controlled legislature. By Caitlin Sievers, March 24, 2025. Former state legislator Daniel Hernandez on Monday announced his plan to run in the special election to represent Arizona's 7th congressional district. Hernandez is the first big name to announce a run for the seat held by Democratic U.S. Congressman Raul Grijalva for more than 20 years until his March 13th death from complications of cancer treatment. A special primary election is set for July 15th, with the general election to follow September 23rd. The Democrat who wins the primary will almost certainly take the seat in the overwhelmingly blue district that spans much of southern Arizona, from Tucson and Nogales to Yuma. In a phone interview with the Arizona Mirror, Hernandez acknowledged that it's a messy time to get into national politics, but said his experiences in the Grand Canyon state have helped prepare him for it. When we're talking about D.C., yes, it's bad, but I've served in the Arizona State Legislature, which I would argue is a pretty big mess, he said. I not only survived it, but was able to fight and actually get wins, and I think that's what we really need right now in Washington, D.C. The Tucson Democrat got into politics early and has been credited with helping to save the life of former U.S. Representative Gabrielle Giffords after she was shot in the head during a campaign event in Tucson in 2011. At the time, Hernandez was a 20-year-old intern in his first week with the Giffords campaign. Hernandez served on the Sunnyside Unified School District and represented Tucson in the Arizona House of Representatives from 2017 through 2022, where he built a reputation for working across the aisle, sometimes to the chagrin of his Democratic colleagues, while also advocating for progressive causes. Hernandez and his sisters, Democratic State Representative Consuelo and Alma Hernandez, who are all Jewish, have faced criticism from other Democrats because of their support for Israel. Hernandez was one of the founding members of the legislature's LGBTQ caucus and advocated for legislation to ban discrimination against gay and transgender people in the workplace. He also worked to lower taxes and to pass a low-income housing tax credit. Hernandez said he believes it's important to honor Grijalva's long legacy of representing the people of southern Arizona, and one of the ways he hopes to do that is by dealing with the cost of living issues that he said are disproportionately impacting people in District 7. That includes protecting Medicaid and Medicare, which are facing possible cuts from Congress and the Trump administration. There are people that will die, Hernandez said. There are people that will lose critical services, and there are a lot of people like my family that are going to be negatively impacted. The results of the November election, Hernandez said, showed that many Democrats are out of touch with their constituents, adding that they should be listening to voters instead of telling them what to care about. We need to listen more and talk less, Hernandez said. But he also said he thinks it's important to make sure Arizonans know exactly how the Trump administration's dismantling of federal agencies will impact their day-to-day lives, something he said the Democrats need to be sending a clear message about. When we're talking about the Department of Education shutting down, it's not just this D.C. bureaucracy, Hernandez said, adding that it will impact programs that help K-12 students in Tucson, especially those with disabilities. Democrats in Congress at the moment are facing backlash from members of their own party who think they're not doing enough to fight back against President Donald Trump's executive overreach. Hernandez said he has plenty of experience getting things accomplished as a member of the minority party, having served for 6 years in the Arizona House of Representatives, which has been under Republican control since 1966. He described his experience dealing with Republican Governor Doug Ducey, along with the GOP-controlled Arizona House and Senate, as a, quote, trial by fire. I think it's been particularly helpful as I gear up for this race to understand that you can still get things done and you can still get wins for your community, even amidst really difficult circumstances, Hernandez said. While the general election for the 7th Congressional District is likely to be uneventful, the Democratic primary could be highly competitive. Hernandez lost the Democratic primary for the 6th Congressional District to Kirsten Engel in 2022. Tucson Mayor Regina Romero, who was viewed by many as a likely candidate, has said she won't run. Grijalva's daughter, Adelita Grijalva, a member of the Pima County Board of Supervisors, is another favorite to run, but she said she won't make any announcements until services for her father have concluded. Democratic Secretary of State and former Maricopa County Recorder Adrian Fontes had said he's considering a run, but has not made any announcements. Hernandez told the Mirror that he's already secured some endorsements that he'll be rolling out soon and feels good about his chances. I'm a gay Latino who got elected at 26 to the State House, Hernandez said. By every measure, I should have had no ability to impact any of the public policy happening in the state of Arizona. But I showed up and talked about my value, and I was able to get things done. And that concludes this first story. Daniel Hernandez launches bid for Southern Arizona congressional seat after Grijalva's death. Our second story, Arizona GOP wages legislative war on transgender existence. Birth certificate ban and school restrictions aim to erase trans identities, though vetoes are certain. By Caitlin Sievers, March 25th, 2025. Republicans in the Arizona legislature have sponsored and supported several pieces of legislation this year that focus on regulating the experiences of transgender people, who make up around 1% of the state's population. That's in addition to a tax on transgender people from President Donald Trump, who has issued multiple executive orders aimed at erasing them from public life. On Tuesday, the House Regulatory Oversight Committee approved along party lines two repeat proposals from Senator John Kavanaugh, a Republican from Fountain Hills, related to preferred name and pronoun use and who can use certain bathrooms and locker rooms in K-12 public schools. Over the past decade, Kavanaugh has repeatedly pushed to keep trans people out of public facilities like bathrooms that align with their gender identity. In recent years, he's focused on attempts to dismantle inclusive policies at public schools. Kavanaugh's Senate Bill 1002 would ban teachers from referring to a student by a name or pronoun that differs from their given name or biological sex without first obtaining written permission from a parent. But even with parental permission, the bill would allow school employees to disregard a student's identity without consequences if they have a, quote, religious or moral objection. Before voting against the bill, Tucson Democrat Consuela Hernandez said that she was tired of seeing the same bill recycled year after year. She added that she was raised to treat people with respect, and that includes using whatever pronouns the person she's addressing requests. It's very disappointing that we're not working on issues that are actually affecting Arizonans, and we just go after trans kids, and it's just very exhausting, and I'm sorry for those who have to hear this, Hernandez said. Representative Alexander Colladin, a Republican from Scottsdale, made light of Hernandez's remark, quipping that he thought Democrats like recycling. Another of Kavanaugh's bills, Senate Bill 1003, would prohibit trans students from using locker rooms and bathrooms that don't match their biological sex. Schools that don't comply could be subject to civil suits for compensation for any, quote, psychological, emotional, and physical harm suffered by other students who encounter trans classmates in any of those locations. It would also ban trans students from staying in a hotel rooms on school trips with classmates or teammates of the opposite biological sex. Kavanaugh told the committee members on Tuesday that his proposal would balance cisgender students' desire for privacy with trans students' discomfort using facilities that don't align with their gender identity. He claimed it does so by allowing trans students to request other accommodations, such as the use of single occupancy or staff bathrooms. Paul Bixler, a transgender woman and advocate, told the committee that this policy was likely to violate the privacy of trans students by, quote, outing them to their peers when the rest of the students notice that they always use single occupancy or staff bathrooms. Bixler said that Kavanaugh's proposal would create an atmosphere of exclusion, alienation, and disenfranchisement. Colladin, a cisgender man, said that he didn't understand how forcing trans students to use separate bathrooms was a privacy issue, and that he personally felt a greater sense of privacy when using a single occupancy bathroom. Both of Kavanaugh's bills already passed through the Senate in February with only Republicans in support. Last year, Democratic Governor Katie Hobbs vetoed two nearly identical bills that Kavanaugh sponsored. But those are far from the only proposed pieces of legislation aimed at transgender people that are moving through the Arizona legislature. On February 12th, by a vote of 32-27, Republicans in the House of Representatives approved House Bill 2062, which would enshrine a narrow definition of biological sex into state law based on a person's physical reproductive characteristics. Critics of the bill, sponsored by anti-trans advocate Representative Lisa Fink, a Republican from Glendale, said it was an attempt to scrub transgender people from existence. The bill was approved along party lines by the Senate's Government and Rules Committees earlier this month and will next head for a vote by the full chamber. On February 19th, Republicans in the House voted to approve House Bill 2438, which would ban transgender people who were born in Arizona from amending their birth certificates to reflect their gender identity. The bill's sponsor, Republican Rachel Keschel, a Tucson Republican and member of the far-right Arizona Freedom Caucus, claimed that its purpose was only to bring the state's birth certificate law in line with the U.S. Constitution and to protect the integrity and accuracy of vital records. Democrats argued that it was simply another attack on transgender people who just want to live their lives in peace. Within the past week, HB 2438 was approved along party lines by the Senate Health and Human Services and Rules Committees and will be next headed for a vote from the full chamber. These efforts from the majority party in both chambers of the Arizona legislature, alongside Trump's executive orders that ban transgender people from serving in the military and prohibit transgender girls and women from playing on girls' school sports teams, are examples of increasing hostility from Republicans toward the trans community over the past several years. In February, Keschel said that her HB 2438 aligned with Trump's first anti-trans executive order, which sought to erase transgender and non-binary identities in the eyes of the federal government. The Republicans' anti-trans bills are likely to pass through the Republican-controlled House and Senate, but will almost certainly meet their end via a veto from Hobbs. Hobbs has promised to block any discriminatory legislation aimed at the LGBTQ community, and has made good on that promise, vetoing multiple anti-trans bills annually since she took office in 2023. And that wraps up this story. Arizona GOP wages legislative war on transgender existence. And next up, we have a two-part story from Shaundine Silversmith on the same topic, tribal flags removed from Phoenix VA hospital under new federal policy, March 20th, 2025. The flags of Arizona's 22 tribal nations have been removed from the Carl T. Hayden VA Medical Center in central Phoenix and given to the Salt River Pima Maricopa Indian community for preservation. I was surprised and appalled when the staff of the Phoenix Veterans Affairs Hospital dropped off all 22 Arizona Tribal Nations flags at our office, explaining that they could no longer display them. Ricardo Leonard, vice president of the Salt River Pima Maricopa Indian community, said in a statement. The flags were removed on March 18th, according to the SRPMIC's Office of Congressional and Legislative Affairs. Not only is this nonsensical, but it dishonors all Native American veterans and their families who have given so much to protect their country, Leonard, a U.S. Army veteran, added. The move comes on the heels of the U.S. Department of Defense deleting websites about the Navajo Code Talkers, who were instrumental to America's victory in the Pacific Theater in World War II. Leonard is calling on the Veterans Affairs Secretary, Doug Collins, to restore the display of all tribal nation flags at the Phoenix VA Hospital, as well as to continue the recognition of tribal nations for their deep commitment to military service. It should be common sense that the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs honors the great legacy of Native American veterans of the 22 tribal nations in Arizona, Leonard said in his statement. It would be a tragedy if the VA chooses not to repost the flags. Indigenous people across the United States serve in the armed forces at 5 times the national average, according to the National Indian Council on Aging, and have served with distinction in every major conflict for over 200 years. Arizona has one of the largest Native voting populations in the country, with more than 305,000 of voting age, according to the National Congress of American Indians. Indigenous people make up 6% of Arizona's overall population. The removal of the flags comes as part of a new flag policy implemented by the Department of Veteran Affairs that limits the display of flags at VA facilities. The policy is intended to establish consistency across the department and aligns with longstanding Department of Defense guidelines, the VA stated in a news release. The policy applies to all VA facilities, including offices, government vehicles, medical centers, common areas, and parking lots. The only flags allowed to be displayed include the U.S. flag, flags of U.S. states and territories, military service flags, VA flags, and official flags of U.S. agencies. and flags representing Prisoners of War Missing in Action, POW, MIA, Senior Executive Service, SES, military command units, and burial flags for honoring veterans and reservists are permitted. All veterans and VA beneficiaries will always be welcome at all VA facilities to receive the benefits and services they have earned under the law, Collins said in a press release. This policy will bring consistency and simplicity to the display of flags throughout the department, ensuring a single focus on serving the needs of veterans, their families, caregivers, and survivors, he added. In a statement emailed to the Arizona Mirror, VA Public Affairs Officer Jessica Jacobson said, under the VA's new flag policy, like all sovereign nation flags, those of federally recognized Indian tribes are only permitted to fly at VA facilities during dignitary visits or special ceremonies. Jacobson said there is one exception to the policy at the VA's Cherokee Nation Medical Clinic in Oklahoma. The clinic is located on tribal lands, and the Cherokee Nation flag is allowed to fly there. Flags of federally recognized tribal flags can still be flown at national cemeteries for Memorial Day, Veterans Day, and other special events attended by senior tribal officials, according to the statement. Gila River Indian Community Governor Stephen Rowe Lewis described the removal of the flags as deeply concerning, emphasizing that it disregards the long-standing acknowledgement that tribes and their members hold political statuses, not racial classifications. The Supreme Court has recognized the critical importance of this distinction, and so should any policy from the federal government, he said in a statement. What is particularly inappropriate is the new policy apparently allows any political sovereign in the state of Arizona to have its flag displayed, except an Indian tribe, he added. Lewis stated that the Gila River Indian community is a, quote, Purple Heart community, because 67 tribal members have received the Purple Heart for their sacrifices. This is an insult to the tribal members who served in our armed forces at a higher per capita rate than any other group in America, and the removal of these flags sends a harmful message that their sacrifices are being diminished or erased, he said. Lewis urged the Secretary of Veterans Affairs to reconsider this policy and restore the display of Arizona's tribal flags at the Phoenix VA hospital. An exemption should be granted for tribal flags, given the unique sovereign status of federally recognized tribes and their profound contributions to our nation's military, he added. And U.S. Congressional Representative Greg Stanton said he is, quote, outraged by the reports of the removal, calling it an insult to Native veterans in a letter to the Secretary of Veteran Affairs requesting that it be corrected. All 22 flags were unceremoniously dropped off at the Salt River Pima Maricopa Indian community with little explanation, he wrote in the letter. Stanton said that Native Americans have served the United States in every major conflict, and many serve now. They have sacrificed, bled, and died for this country, he added. Removing the flags of Arizona's sovereign tribal nations from the U.S. government building where Native veterans go to seek care after they've returned home is an insult to their service. Stanton requested that it be immediately corrected. The Hualapai tribe's chairman released a statement and expressed his appreciation to the Salt River Pima Maricopa Indian community for protecting the Hualapai flag alongside the other Arizona tribes. Your immediate advocacy and public statement condemning this disrespectful act have resonated deeply within our community and across Indian country, said Dwayne Clark, chairman of the Hualapai tribe. We stand in solidarity with the Salt River Pima Maricopa Indian community and all other Arizona tribal nations in demanding that the VA rectify this egregious error, he said. And the second story on this topic, Hobbs displays tribal flags in executive tower after removal from VA hospital, by Sean Dean Silversmith, March 25th, 2025. Following the abrupt removal of the flags representing Arizona's 22 tribal nations from the Carl T. Hayden VA Medical Center in central Phoenix, Governor Katie Hobbs is displaying the flags in the Executive Tower at the state capitol. Arizona is proud of the tribal veterans who sacrificed for their country, Hobbs said in a press release. We should be recognizing their service, not disrespecting their heritage. The flags were entrusted to Hobbs by the Salt River Pima Maricopa Indian community after they were removed on March 18th and dropped off with the tribe by staff from the Phoenix VA Hospital. It's my honor to display these flags at the Executive Tower, and I am grateful to all the tribal leaders who have entrusted me with this responsibility, Hobbs added in her written statement. I will always support our veterans and vow to keep these flags safe until they can be returned to their rightful place at the VA hospital. Salt River, Pima Maricopa Indian Community President Martin Javier said that the tribe is grateful they had the opportunity to receive the tribal flags and have them for a short time. We are thankful Governor Hobbs has agreed to take the flags to display them at the Arizona Capitol, a more prominent and appropriate place for them to be located, he said. Several Arizona tribal nations and state officials called the removal disrespectful for all indigenous people who served in the U.S. military and all the veterans who seek help from the Phoenix VA. Sherry Cordova, chairwoman of the Kokopa tribe, said the Veterans Administration's removal of the tribal flags was both insulting and disrespectful to all members of Arizona's 22 tribal nations. Cordova said that even though the Kokopa tribe is small, they have a large number of people who serve in the military, but they are being disrespected by the very country they defended. Our contribution to this country were great. Now it seems we are being erased, she said in a statement. We are citizens of this nation, and we should be recognized for the service of our proud men and women. Indigenous people across the United States serve in the armed forces at 5 times the national average, according to the National Indian Council on Aging, and have served with distinction in every major conflict for over 200 years. Arizona has one of the largest Native American populations in the country, including a high number living on tribal lands, according to the U.S. Census. Indigenous people make up 6% of Arizona's overall population. The removal of the flags was the result of a new flag policy implemented by the Department of Veterans Affairs that limits the display of flags at VA facilities. The policy is intended to establish consistency across the department and aligns with longstanding Department of Defense guidelines, the VA stated in a news release. The policy applies to all VA facilities, including offices, government vehicles, medical centers, common areas, and parking lots. The only flags allowed to be displayed include the U.S. flag, flags of U.S. states and territories, military service flags, VA flags, and official flags of U.S. agencies. And flags representing Prisoners of War Missing in Action, POW/MIA, Senior Executive Service, SES, military command units, and burial flags for honoring veterans and reservists are permitted. And that concludes this second story on this topic. Hobbs displays tribal flags in Executive Tower after removal from VA hospital. You're listening to the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week at this time by Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster. And the second half of our program starts with this story. Military-grade surveillance tech will be on display at Border Security Expo in Phoenix next month. Trump's border czar and companies with controversial histories will gather to sell their wares. By Jared McDonald Evoy, March 26, 2025. Phoenix will be hosting a convention featuring President Donald Trump's border czar, as well as hundreds of military and tech companies bidding for government border contracts, including a company involved in the torture in Abu Ghraib. The Border Security Expo at the Phoenix Convention Center, April 8th and 9th, features panel discussions as well as an expo floor where vendors can hawk their wares to government officials from around the world. It's just a big marketplace of companies, mostly tech companies, trying to sell things to the government. David Maas, Director of Investigations for the Electronic Frontier Foundation, told the Arizona Mirror about the event. The EFF has previously cataloged the vendors who attend the annual conference, with a focus on technologies such as AI, infrared cameras, and more. The Trump administration has made border security a top priority after campaigning on immigration as a major issue. The administration's actions have faced scrutiny for their lack of due process, and they have consistently tried to keep their mass deportation plans a secret. The Mirror attempted to get press credentials to the Border Security Expo, but was told that the event is closed to the press, quote, this year. The event website lists media partners, which include online pro-law enforcement trade publications like Border Security Report, Homeland Security Today, and Officer.com. Homeland Security Today is run by a group of CEOs whose companies are on the expo floor. The event will feature a number of high-ranking officials from Customs and Border Patrol, U.S. Department of Homeland Security, Drug Enforcement Agency, and Immigration and Customs Enforcement. The most high-profile is Trump's, quote, border czar, Tom Homan. Homan served as the acting director of ICE in Trump's first term. He backed the controversial zero-tolerance policy at the southern border and has been connected to far-right extremist and conspiracy theorist groups. Homan is scheduled to give the opening remarks at the event as part of a, quote, state of the border discussion. Cochise County Sheriff Mark Daniels will also speak at the event on a panel to give local perspectives to border issues. While the event will feature a number of panel discussions and high-profile speakers, it will also feature a litany of companies who will be aiming to impress government officials at the event in the hopes of securing a government contract or continuing an existing one. The Mirror examined the list of companies set to be in attendance to highlight some of the key trends as well as noteworthy companies seeking the attention of the government officials. The military-industrial complex. Many, if not most, of the vendors at the expo also serve the United States military and militaries overseas. For example, Thales Defense and Security, Inc. is a subsidiary of Thales Group, a French multinational aerospace and defense corporation. Its subsidiary has primarily done work on radio upgrades for the U.S. Army and NATO forces and will be present on the expo floor. When it comes to immigration and border enforcement, the company has supplied the systems the United States uses at ports of entry that involve biometric data. Other companies known for their large military contracts, such as BAE Systems, also will be present. One particular military contracting company with a dark past also will have a booth on the expo floor. In November 2024, a jury found that CACI, I think that's CACI, International, shared liability with the U.S. Army for the torture of three Iraqi men at the Abu Ghraib prison in 2004, awarding the men $42 million. The Virginia-based defense contractor has long gotten a number of contracts from the Department of Homeland Security. CACI International is not the only government contractor with a controversial past. Journalists at ProPublica recently exposed how private prison company GEO Group, an ICE contractor, has been refusing to pay detainees more than $1 a day for cleaning the government facilities at which they live. GEO Group stocks have skyrocketed under the Trump administration to $4 billion. Another group with ties to Trump and a controversial backstory that will be present on the expo floor is Constellis, part of the private security company known as Triple Canopy. Triple Canopy is a formation of what were once rival private security companies, Blackwater and Constellus. Guards from that company were spotted outside various federal agencies that were being taken over by billionaire Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency. Also present will be Anduril Industries, which has ties to Palantir, and whose Director of Defense Technology was nominated by Trump to serve as the Army's number two official. Military-grade equipment. The expo floor will be full of vendors showing off their products, which range from physical products like cameras and ground sensors to software that can be used to process data obtained by law enforcement. Much of that equipment is also military grade. Groups like ProTech Defense, Seoul Marine Group, and Quickset Defense Technologies make military grade equipment that is marketed not just to federal agencies patrolling the border, but military customers. Other tech is similar, often showcased being used by armed forces in online literature or described with military jargon. Many of the surveillance camera platforms are similar or the same as those used on military aircraft, naval vessels, or ground vehicles. Some firms, like Controp USA, boast about the capabilities of their surveillance platforms for both local law enforcement and military. The militarization of police and border enforcement has long been a point of debate among privacy advocates, with research suggesting that law enforcement has more access to military-grade equipment and they're more likely to have violent encounters with the public as a result. Strong Watch will have a presence at the expo, and it already has some of its tools in the hands of local Arizona law enforcement. The Phoenix Police Department has one of Strong Watch's Freedom on the Move surveillance truck platforms, which are frequently deployed at parades and protests. Anti-pro drone. This year's expo also features a number of companies focused on anti-drone technology, something local lawmakers and Attorney General Chris Mays have been focused on lately as well. House Bill 2733 by Representative David Marshall, a Republican from Snowflake, would give local law enforcement immunity from liability for damage to personal property if they are shooting down a drone they believe is engaged in criminal activity. The bill comes amid an increase in drug cartel drones flying over the state's southern border. GOP lawmakers and Mays say that local police should be able to shoot them out of the sky without fear they will be sued. A large number of tech companies at the expo this year are offering their own solutions to this problem. Fortem Technologies has provided its counter UAS, unmanned aerial systems, a technical term for drones, equipment to Ukrainian forces, leading it to be sanctioned by Russia in response. The company has already been attracting interest from DHS, but other competitors have been vying for what appears to be a burgeoning market. The Mirror found four other companies that will be on the expo floor selling anti-drone tech, with another that has sent one of its devices to frontline forces in Ukraine. But there are just as many companies, if not more, wanting to put eyes up in the sky as there are that want to remove them. Aerial surveillance is a major strategy of CBP and DHS, who deploy aerial assets to the border daily to follow suspects or surveil areas where border crossers are known to frequent or smugglers are known to go. A number of companies focused on different forms of aerial surveillance are also present at this year's expo, including multiple manufacturers of aerostats, a type of blimp. Recently, one of CBP's blimps became untethered in Texas, leading it to fly miles away after being blown away by gusts of wind. There's a company here, it's Q-I-N-E-T-I, capital Q. The UK firm behind the Zephyr Pseudo-satellite, a high-flying unmanned aircraft that can stay aloft for months at a time, will also be at the expo. Ascent Aerosystems, a subsidiary of Robinson Helicopters, will be at the expo and is currently promoting a new drone that it says is, quote, advanced aerial surveillance in the palm of your hand. A number of new drone technologies appear to be on display at this year's expo, including a hydrogen-powered drone and a tethered drone as well. AI and more. Another trend this year is the promotion of artificial intelligence. Many of the companies tout the use of AI either to boost already existing programs or to be used in new ways. One such company is Overland AI, which recently raised $32 million in funding. The company aims to create fully autonomous ground vehicles for the military, and Overland is partnered with L3 Harris, one of the largest defense contractors in the world, who will also be present at the expo. Other uses for AI are for surveillance gathering and analysis, such as with Australian-based Fivecast, which has previously signed contracts with DHS to use AI to look for open-source intelligent threats. Social media monitoring tools that have alarmed privacy advocates, like Shadow Dragon, will also be present at the expo. Other software companies that will be on the sales floor have faced controversy in the past. One company, Perceptix, which has gotten contracts with the federal government for biometric data collection and automatic license plate reader collection, was part of the reason for a major breach in biometric data related to a facial recognition pilot program. A subcontractor working on this effort, Perceptix LLC, transferred copies of CBP's biometric data, such as traveler images, to its own company network. The subcontractor obtained access to this data between August 2018 and January 2019 without CBP's authorization or knowledge. Later in 2019, DHS experienced a major privacy incident as the subcontractor's network was subject to a malicious cyber attack, the Office of the Inspector General wrote in a 2020 report. While the event is closed to the press and largely to the public, those who can afford it can opt to pay $1,395 for the full conference. Those with government email or .edu email addresses can get in for free, and the expo offers a guide to those seeking to justify the event's cost to their employer. Akima, who got nearly $1 billion in contracts with the United States Space Force last year, is the expo's top sponsor. However, under the supporting organizations banner of the event are some more notable organizations. The Texas Public Policy Foundation is a conservative think tank whose members have been promoted by Trump in the previous administration and have denied climate change, pushed school vouchers, and received funding from both the GEO Group and Koch Industries. The Texas Public Policy Foundation was also on the advisory board of the Heritage Foundation's Project 2025. Project 2025 is a collection of right-wing proposals from the Heritage Foundation, a conservative think tank, to reshape the United States federal government and consolidate executive power under the Trump administration. The list of policy plans was largely created by former Trump aides and allies. Another supporting organization is the Border Patrol Foundation, whose president in 2018 garnered controversy for defending the use of pepper spray on migrants at the border by saying that a person could put it on nachos and eat it. That man, Ron Colburn, is on the advisory board for the expo. And that concludes this story. Military-grade surveillance tech will be on display at Border Security Expo in Phoenix next month. Next up, Stanton and Ansari demand return of Arizona Native Heroes to Pentagon website, by Shandine Silversmith, March 25, 2025. Content about two prominent Arizona Native American veterans that was removed from the U.S. Department of Defense's website during a purge of information that didn't focus on the accomplishments of white men remains missing. The purge came in response to President Donald Trump's executive order banning diversity, equity, and inclusion in the federal government. Stories and details about U.S. Marine Ira Hayes, who is Pima Akimel Odom from the Gila River Indian community, alongside U.S. Army Specialist Lori Ann Pistua, who is Hopi, remains absent from the Department of Defense's website. As of Tuesday, a keyword search for Ira Hayes still brings up zero results, and only one article appears for Lori Ann Pistua. U.S. Representatives Greg Stanton and Yasemin Ansari sent a letter to Secretary of Defense Peter Hegseth urging the reinstatement of content featuring Hayes and Pistua. Efforts by the DoD to recognize any veteran's selfless service to our nation have nothing to do with any type of DEI initiative, the Phoenix Democrats wrote. Stanton and Ansari wrote in the letter that, due to the sovereign status of tribal nations and their members, indigenous people are correctly viewed as political entities, not racial groups. They cited U.S. Supreme Court precedent and long-standing legal doctrine. Other mistakenly removed references to Native American veterans and service members have been restored, but information on these two pivotal figures is still missing, they wrote. The DoD also deleted websites about the Navajo Code Talkers, who were instrumental to America's victory in the Pacific Theater in World War II. Hayes, alongside five other Marines, raised the U.S. flag on the island of Iwo Jima at the summit of Mount Suribachi on February 23, 1945. He was part of the 5th Marine Division and fought in the Battle of Iwo Jima until the island was secured on March 26, 1945. The photograph of the flag raising during the Battle of Iwo Jima is one of the most iconic images of World War II, taken months into the battle by Associated Press photographer Joe Rosenthal. The history of Ira Hayes and his bravery during this pivotal battle and at the flag raising is a point of pride and inspiration for the Gila River Indian community, as it should be for all citizens of the United States, Stanton and Ansari wrote. Pistua served with the 507th Maintenance Company during Operation Iraqi Freedom. In March 2003, at 23 years old, she became the first servicewoman killed in action in Iraq and the first Native American woman to die in foreign combat in the service of the United States. Stanton and Ansari noted in their letter how former Arizona Governor Janet Napolitano renamed a mountain in the Phoenix area and State Route 51 in Pistua's honor a month after she died in combat. They also highlighted how, as the mayor of Phoenix, Stanton advocated for renaming several streets in the city to honor her sacrifice. We must never forget the sacrifices made by Native American veterans and service members throughout our nation's history, they stated. Indigenous people across the United States serve in the armed forces at five times the national average, according to the National Indian Council on Aging, and have served with distinction in every major conflict for over 200 years. It is with this history in mind, with our great pride in these incredible Arizonans, that we request the immediate and full reinstatement of all information pertaining to PFC Ira Hayes and Army Specialist Lori Pistua to the DoD website, the letter states. And that concludes this story. Stanton and Ansari demand return of Arizona Native heroes to Pentagon website. Our next story, politics derails bill criminalizing, quote, stolen valor claims in Arizona, by Jared McDonald Evoy, March 20th, 2025. Arizona lawmakers want to impose criminal penalties against people who falsely claim military service or honors to receive benefits, but the proposal is facing major hurdles from some Republicans because of a political dispute in last year's elections. The Arizona House of Representatives already unanimously passed House Bill 2030, which would make it impersonating a veteran to obtain employment, government contracts, or benefits a Class 4 felony. The bill is the brainchild of Representative Walt Blackman, a Republican from Snowflake, and U.S. Army veteran. Last year, Blackman was locked in a primary election contest against Steve Slatten, the owner of the Trump store in Sholo, a popular campaign spot for the MAGA faithful. Slatten falsely claimed to be a Vietnam veteran and even altered his DD-214, a document given to veterans upon their retirement that includes a record of their service and awards, to show service in Vietnam. In reality, Slatten was stationed in Korea between January and December 1974 as a helicopter repairman, and he was never deployed in Vietnam. But Slatten was endorsed by Senator Wendy Rogers, a Republican from Flagstaff, as well as Senator Mark Fincham, a Republican from Prescott. Blackman was critical of Slatten and Rogers during the campaign. Slatten lost in the primary election. Rogers, a retired Air Force pilot, chairs the Senate Judiciary and Elections Committee, the panel that was assigned to hear Blackman's HB 2030. She has refused to schedule the bill for a hearing, and with the deadline for committees to consider bills coming March 28th, the measure is effectively dead. Rogers, Fincham, and Senate President Warren Peterson did not respond to requests for comment for this story. Now, Blackman and supporters of the measure are pursuing other options and seeking to apply pressure to get the bill heard, whether that be in another committee or by using Strike Everything Amendment on another bill to resurrect the proposal. Senator Sean Abalak, a Republican from Phoenix, allowed Blackman to put a Strike Everything Amendment onto her bill, Senate Bill 1424, which has already been voted out of the Senate. That amendment was approved by the House Government Committee on March 19th. The Strike Everything Amendment copies the text of HB 2030 that is stalled in Rogers' committee. If the bill passes the full House, it would return to the Senate for a final vote. Whether that happens would be up to Peterson. We need to stop playing politics and start doing what's right by our veterans, Representative Stacey Travers, a Democrat from Phoenix, said at a March 19th press conference with Blackman and veterans about Rogers' refusal to consider the bill. Travers, an Army veteran herself, praised Blackman's bill and said that it has bipartisan support, pointing to its unanimous passage in the House. "That wasn't a mistake. That was on purpose," Representative Quanta Cruz, a Democrat from Avondale, said of the unanimous vote. Blackman urged Peterson to have the bill either reassigned out of Rogers' committee, urge Rogers to hear the bill, or have the Strike Everything version receive a full vote by the full Senate. "It is a shame, it is a sin," said Jim Murr, who served in the Army in Vietnam, adding that he did not understand why Rogers was blocking the legislation. He said he wants Peterson to move it to another committee. "I'm not in her head," Blackman said when asked why Rogers may be holding the legislation. "I would say there are some personal reasons." Blackman, without naming Slatten, said that he believes Rogers and Fincham may be trying to protect a, quote, "gentleman in Sholo," but he is unsure why. Rogers and Blackman have a history of butting heads, and Blackman was one of the few Republican lawmakers to condemn comments Rogers made in the wake of a mass shooting targeting black shoppers in Buffalo, New York, in a grocery store in 2022. Blackman is black, while Rogers, who is white, has strong ties to white nationalists, including speaking at a white nationalist conference and calling attendees, quote, "patriots." In 2005, a similar bill was passed by Congress, though parts of it were found to be unconstitutional because it violated the First Amendment. Blackman said he aimed to avoid that by focusing slowly on those who impersonate veterans for benefits that they would otherwise not be entitled to receive, and adding that to existing state scam and fraud laws. "I am asking Senator Rogers and Senator Fincham to either get on board or get out of the way," Blackman said, eliciting cheers and shouts of amen from the veterans surrounding him. There's a note that an earlier version of this story incorrectly said the deadline for bills to be heard in committee was March 21. The actual deadline is March 28th. That concludes this story, Politics Derails Bill Criminalizing Stolen Valor Claims in Arizona. And finally, Magic Money. Arizona Republicans Advance Bills to Legitimize Cryptocurrency by Jared McDonald Devoy, March 19, 2025. Republican measures aimed at bolstering cryptocurrency usage in the state by deeming it, quote, legal tender and creating a strategic reserve moved forward, despite concerns over volatility and the lawmakers' connections to the cryptocurrency world. Those connections to crypto were on full display and ultimately a source of humor for state representatives as they plowed ahead on embracing cryptocurrencies. I hope I'm not advertising here, but now would be a good time to invest in XRP and Bitcoin, Senator Mark Fincham, a Republican from Prescott, said as his colleagues on the House Commerce Committee laughed while he testified in support of his legislation, Senate Bill 1373. That legislation, which is similar to another Republican-backed bill that was heard in committee on Tuesday, is part of a larger GOP push to legitimize cryptocurrency in the Grand Canyon state. The bills mirror moves by 22 other states that have introduced similar legislation, authorizing the state treasurer or state pension funds to invest in cryptocurrency, often dubbed the Strategic Bitcoin Reserve Act. The state-level actions come as President Donald Trump, who was backed by crypto investors during the 2024 campaign, has pushed for similar proposals regarding cryptocurrency at the federal level. And we're going to have to leave it there with a note that the bill did pass along party lines. And if it passes the full chamber, it will head to Governor Katie Hobbs for her signature. And that's all the time we have for this week's edition of the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week by SunSounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster. If you missed any part of this program or want to hear a story again, go to our website, sunsounds.org, and click on demand podcasts. You can also take SunSounds with you by getting our new app for Apple and Android phones, and you can also listen on your Echo Dot or other smart home device. Thanks so much for joining us this week. Stay tuned for more great programming from SunSounds of Arizona, and we'll look forward to seeing you next week.